I'll be talking today about lawful interception of IP traffic, the European context. I should have had a sexier title. This is clear from the amount of people here. I should have said something like, fucking with the authorities or something. Ooh, am I allowed to say that? or how they tried to bleep us, or something like that. But yeah, wasn't clever enough for that. I'm just going to do this so that we can get to the party and start drinking on time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me. If I'm going too fast, as I have a tendency to do, stop me then. And if I say anything that sounds like utter gibberish, you have no permission to stop me, because that is actually what I'm supposed to be saying. That was a joke, and I will cue you when you are supposed to laugh. No, joking. Okay, so what exactly do we mean when we are going to discuss a subject? I forgot I had a content slide. So the way that this is going to go is, first I'm going to introduce you generically to what we mean when we say lawful interception. Then what specifically the law means when it says interception of internet services. The origins in the EU, the EU interception legislation, ETSI, European Telecommunications Standards Institute, the Dutch specifications, interception suppliers, discussion of techniques, future developments and issues. Okay, a couple of things. I am not a lawyer. I do not play one on TV. I am a network architect. I have designed solutions for lawful interception in a couple of countries and worked with a couple of operators and a few governments, people who cannot be named. So the reason I'm introducing the law is the technical stuff to arrange is not that difficult. Forgive me, I was going to use another profane word, but the problem is actually in the legal stuff that needs to be arranged and the stuff you need to follow and the requirements that they've set up in their unique wisdom. And the reason I'm going to give you a Dutch example is because the Dutch are possibly, you know, besides having sex, drugs, and rock and roll in Amsterdam, they are the deepest interceptors in the world. They intercept everything. They have the most amount of intercepts. Or they could just be telling the truth the most about the amount of intercepts that they perform on GSM, IP, and telephony. Okay. So, what do we mean when we say lawful interception? ETSI defines it as something that's done by a network operator to make certain information available to a law enforcement monitoring facility. And this is usually done on the basis of a warrant. Hello. Slow PC. Okay. Hey. No, I've built it. Systems. Okay. I've just done implementation of LI systems. So I have not built... I'm not affiliated with developing the standard at ETSI. It's just I've implemented a couple of LI systems. So that's building, sorry? No, I'm not on ETSI. But in order to be part of ETSI, you need to either be at the operator, so you need to work for the operator, or for a vendor. And at this moment, for those of you who are employed, no, I'm kidding. I am an independent freelancer, and I like it that way because it's better rather than being affiliated with a specific vendor. I am working for different telcos, so that makes it quite easier to perform these kinds of tasks, especially to review vendor implementations of LI software and hardware. Okay, so we have a raison d'etre for interception, and the most common causes that are given by governments to intercept is the standard rigmarole, terrorism, pedophilia, cyberstalking, data theft, industrial espionage, drug dealers. Of course, these are not the only reasons that you intercept. These are the most popular. These are the ones that you hear about in the press. So other reasons can also include financial fraud, different types of fraud that are happening on the internet, not just for financial gain, but other kinds of attacks. So these are all legitimate reasons that you can have to intercept. In Holland, there is a different type of mandate for interception. The only way that a government can ask for a warrant to intercept your communications in the Netherlands is if the crime that you are supposedly committing is punishable by more than 4 years of prison time. So it means, like, really severe crimes are the only basis to initiate an interception warrant. Everything else, like if you're just a small-time drug dealer, which in the Netherlands, you know, it's not that bad, and certainly not punishable by 4 years in prison, then, well, you won't get an interception order on your behalf. Yeah. I'm doing a more international thing, yes. The U.S. Patriot Act, though, is definitely a one of the impetus, one of the drivers for the rest of the international legislation, specifically when it comes to on what basis you're allowed to intercept. It's getting more and more free. But it's just about those things. And one thing about that I have to tell you is what I'm going to be talking about is a fundamentally newer system in terms of legal and technical basis than what's happening in the United States. The U.S. is actually pretty behind in LI. Okay, so why do you not want to intercept? Well, the obvious, more obvious reasons for privacy and security. Security because the LI system that you're using, if it's connected or intimately with your production network, could be the weakness of your network. And that's something that you want to prevent. So you don't want your LI system to be the area in where you get hacked. You also don't want your LI system to be causing massive amounts of delay or weakening of your total throughput or anything like this, because it does have to run over your ISP's the same links that you're using for serving your customers. You're going to be serving the LEA at the same area. Okay, so there are the legal issues in LI. For those of you who are really bored by this stuff, feel free to fall asleep now. I have a cute little quote from Rumpel, and the judge says, "So, am I supposed to be here to hear the truth?" And the objection counsel says, "No, your lordship is to hear the evidence." And that's the fundamental subtle distinction between evidence, is that you have to remember that evidence is something that's being collected, but is not necessarily the full representation of the actual fact. And with regards to digital evidence, it's especially difficult to characterize its veracity in court. Because it can differ on the primary point of regular evidence. So when you have digital evidence, we ask the question, well, does it follow the criteria that we need? Is it admissible? Can it be considered in court? Was it garnered in an appropriate fashion, you know, on the basis of a warrant, et cetera? And this differs per country on how you're allowed to do evidence collection and what counts for admissibility. Especially within Europe, these things are not harmonized at all. You know, even the EU claims to be able to do this. The actual email, whether it's admissible in court that you've collected over an intercept, it's not always used towards presenting a prosecution case. Is it actually authentic? Can you explicitly link the data to the individual referred to in the case? That differs as well, or it's very difficult to explicitly link that data because anyone could have been using that PC. Is it accurate, the reliability of the surveillance across the intercept, which means you've collected the thing, now you've got to store it, and how do you know that no one's tampered with it? Have you hashed it? Have you checksummed it? What have you done to ensure that the email hasn't been, you know, just changed or made up or completely falsified along the way? That's not very easy with digital evidence. And is it complete? Does it say, okay, here's the beginning part of the story, here's when he logged on, here's what he did in the meantime, here's when he logged off. And he came from this IP address. It's got to be a full story of the evidence. You can't just have this one random HTTP get to a porn server that's serving child porn. It needs to be the whole thing. And finally, is it convincing to juries? The problem is, well, in Europe, there's not a lot of countries that actually have a full-fledged jury system, but then you need to replace juries with judge. Is it actually convincing to a judge? Judges are not technically savvy. So when you have a reasonable doubt implied by a defense attorney to the evidence that's being presented by the prosecution, well, the judges, you know, they don't know. They have no clue how to decide this. So it's very difficult to actually be convincing about this kind of evidence to a judge. Okay. The other issue is about surveillance evidence. You have a virtual locus delicti. A locus delicti is the scene of the crime. It's virtual. There's no real scene. There was no, he was murdered in the kitchen and here's a chalk outline. There's nothing like that. And it's also hard to find criminals in delicto flagrante, in actual, red-handed, committing the crime. And then you have these issues about what I tried to explain before, how to handle this expert evidence. So they're, you know, trying to make legal decisions and not scientific ones. So when their actual decision comes out about evidence questions, the initial, reportability of the evidence, those are all going to be, according to this and this legal basis, we can admit it, but not because of this and this factual basis. The case for treating intercepted evidence in Holland is that it's secondary, which means that it's, for example, a copy of the actual information. It's not the real information that was given. So you can't use this as the flaming gun, or how do I say, not flaming, smoking, thank you. The smoking gun in the case. So you can't use it to actually convict someone of a crime. You can use it to supplement primary evidence, you know, other kinds of information that you found, but you can't use it as the actual thing. So that's also... Yes. Yes, because you can't explicitly link that data to the individual. Unless you've got like a biometrically authenticating keyboard where you're like, okay, I've got his fingerprint as he's typing, and so, you know, and it has to be a part of a whole authentication process. With, you know. So you need to pass a lot of tests, you know, in the first place to be using this intercepted information. So I want to make that clear. So even though you can be rampant about setting up an intercept and asking for them and popping them, you can't actually be rampant about using them to the same degree in a court of law. Okay, so this is pretty basic. What do we define as internet services? We define actual access as an internet service. The services that go over the web are also subject to interception. So HTML, email, chat, ICQ, VoIP, FTP, Telnet. What do we do in the case of encrypted traffic? Basically, when you're talking about any encrypted traffic, from PGP to an IPsec tunnel for a VPN, to an encrypted PGP phone or anything else, it's the government's problem. According to ETSI, the network operator or service provider is only responsible for delivering the traffic. If that traffic is encrypted, tough luck. The government needs to figure out a way to decrypt it. So this differs, of course, from when the network operator or service provider is actually providing the encryption. So if you have the SSH key to your server, you have to provide that to the government, or you have to decrypt the information that you're encrypting as a provider, and then provide that information over the government. So, yes. Yes. If provided by the service provider, hardware, software, application level, anything, it's got to be either decrypted or the method for decryption needs to be provided. It's better, by the way, than escrow. So I prefer such a system where you have to do it on demand rather than making a permanently available set of keys to the authorities, or not providing encryption at all, or building it into a protocol. So, yeah, but yes. Yes. Well, I mean, some countries are more strict than others. France is especially strict, and France has relaunched the full escrow debate, and they are busy with setting up an escrow system now, you know?
No.
Oh, that's terrible. Yes. Yes, Allah. But, yes, so they are busy with such a thing, but otherwise, this debate in Europe right now has been subdued, and as long as it's available when needed, no one's raising a fuss. Okay, so, right. Okay, here's a really simple logical overview. As you can tell, this is like Pretty Little Clouds and everything. Okay, here's a bad guy in his PC. He has either a DSL connection or a dial-up connection or a cable connection or whatever he's using. And in this particular example, it's DSL or dial-up over a PSTN cloud. And what I'm trying to illustrate in this particular slide is who is responsible for providing the interception. So Etsy has basically said, you know, they've got these Etsy documents, and they said, okay, well, this is how we're going to define the guy who's actually responsible for setting up, maintaining, building, and providing all the information to the LEMF. This has a huge amount of burdens, both financial, in terms of the organization, et cetera. And what they've flatly done is said, okay, let's put it as high as possible on the OSI layer. So where do we want to intercept? Do we want to intercept at the physical layer, so which would be the telco domain? Do we want to intercept at the network layer, which is the ISP domain? And that's where they put it. So from network layer to application layer, that's where they actually want to conduct the interception. So actually, they prefer to conduct it all the way on the application layer. But at this time, they're like kind of all the responsibility is shifted to the ISP provider. So if you have an additional service provider, like let's imagine that you've got a guy providing you with video on demand services, yeah? And you've got subscribers to that service. But there's a particular video on demand service that also serves just a gateway for additional video services elsewhere, you know, like video, broadband conferencing, et cetera. If the what the responsibility will be is not at the telco domain, but at that provider domain, because he's supplying as close as possible to that application traffic. Is that clear? Okay. So if there's someone above the ISP domain, so an additional service above the ISP domain, it would be them that would be served with the warrant. And there's basic law in the Netherlands, as well as in all European countries now. If you are providing a public communication service, anything, GSM, internet, telephony, you have to be able, when requested, to provide those communications over to the LEMF, to the Law Enforcement Monitoring Facility, all the time. Imagine having this done real time as required. This is an incredible financial consideration for some smaller ISPs. So these kinds of issues are coming into play. But in any case, to cover the responsibility, what we have is this user connecting over the PSTN cloud to his ISP. He connects, and he goes to the Radius server. The Radius logon goes to the interception box here in red. And then he maybe is using his mail server. So the actual interception device is not sitting at this router or at this router. He's sitting at the actual areas where the user is using the service. So if he's using mail, he's sitting off of the mail server, so he gets like just the TCP traffic that's coming out of the mail server from that particularly identified target that's been established by the Radius request. And it's getting channeled over a separate link back to the relevant agency that requested the warrant in the first place. Sometimes there's multiple agencies requesting the same warrant. So the FBI could intercept the same exact target as the CIA. One of the requirements of an interception solution is that they be transparent also to each other. And in the case I'm going to talk to you about in the Netherlands, that law enforcement monitoring facility is only one, and then it gets rerouted to the separate entity as requested. Yes, there is. I'll be covering that in the subsequent slides, but absolutely. Can you imagine? So here you have your, I don't know, you're intercepting, who's popular here? Scarface? Isn't he a Vegas bad guy? No? Okay, I have no idea. But a bad guy. But you're intercepting the bad guys. And the bad guys aren't all stupid, but let's just say you're intercepting him. And then what do? You transfer the communication from the ISP on a clear channel. That's just not feasible. But there's all different kinds of stipulations that were made by Etsy, as well as by the Dutch. Yes. Mm-hmm. No. Yes. I mean, I'm going to go into that as well a bit. But actually, let me just repeat his question. Did everybody hear it? Well, his question was basically, does this nullify this logical overview? Is it become useless if you're going outside an Etsy country? No. This is really how a lot of the interception systems that are built today, the vendor implementations, this is what they look like. This is the rough architecture. But this is a commercial vendor implementation. What I'm also going to be talking to you about today, which actually I signed an NDA for, so I'll only tell you the stuff that you're allowed to know, is you have these little boxes here, and they could be a Cisco box or a Juniper box or whatever. And now we're talking about a new way to intercept, which is not intercepting at just the application layer, but intercepting directly off the box, off the Cisco. And how many of you know of who Fred Baker is? Okay, Fred Baker is this gentleman at Cisco who's working on, he already has written an IETF draft that concerns how Cisco's policy is on wiretapping and how they're going to accomplish it. But I'm going to talk about that later. But remind me again, if I don't mention the Cisco solution, that I need to do that. Okay? Okay. There are some technical challenges, of course, to this solution. So one of the most fundamental ones that is actually the most difficult to accomplish is to maintain the transparency and the standard of communication. If the attacker is using, let's say, 10 DSL links, yeah, and he's pumping them full, he cannot notice if he's on a network point, if he's being tapped by pumping those things full and then saying, oh, hey, look at this other link from the ISP. It's peaking. You can't notice that the intercept is happening by changing the flow of communications on the communication side of the normal production environment. That's clear. So you can't let the user know that he's being tapped. But you also can't have the solution be non-transparent to the people within the environment. So it has to be a solution that if you've got a normal production network, that the people on that network, they cannot tell at all that there's interception happening. There can't be delay in throughput of a normal user versus an intercepted user. All those different things. So those are pretty difficult standards to meet. Also, identifying the target, monitoring all the radius traffic. The actual implementations of lots of different providers show that that's one of the harder areas. They're just not fast enough in setting up the filter, because basically, what do you know? You know, especially when you have a radio server, you know the target username, hopefully. Yeah, because you've done a name address correlation with the ISP. You know, here I am, Mr. Law Enforcement Person. I have a warrant. I give this warrant on the basis of John Doe at AOL.com. I give it to AOL. And then AOL has his warrant and they have John Doe. Now they need to link John Doe with jdoe at AOL.com, which is his actual email address. Yeah? And then once they have the username, they need to get the radius log request in. So their actual filter setting needs to be, okay, I have a software mediation device that goes, look for John Doe. When he logs on, I want to capture his radius request and all his subsequent traffic for that particular IP address that I just assigned. Very often, you either miss the radius logon or the radius logoff. So what do? You're either don't know that he's logged on at all, so you totally miss what he's done, or he's logged off, and now you're actually tapping, what's your name? You're tapping Vijay, which is really bad, because now you have to take all the stuff that you've collected and you have to chuck it, because that's not allowed legally. You're not allowed to tap a party without a warrant. And because it's in the same stream of communications, you've got to chuck the whole thing. Yeah. Historical data is a special field all on its own. Historical data implies data retention. And there's a different type of what you're allowed to do, of law for that. Because data retention right now is limited to very high-level data, log-on, log-off, and maybe some initial thing about timing and other logs. I'm sorry? No, you're allowed to store data retention is something that I'm also going to be talking about, but the point of data retention now is only for logging information. So it's only for high-level information. So it's not the actual content of communications, right? So the point is that now you are allowed to store all the log-on, logs-off of everyone in the room and all the logs that you collect from your general servers. You know, that you can keep all of that. But when you're talking about content of communication, which is what I'm referring to, because first you were capturing the content of what John Doe was doing. Then you missed that radius log off and you started capturing the content of him, his private communications, which was not subject to the warrant. When you have done that, you need to actually, like, you cannot keep any of that data. It's no longer admissible. And because of the way that the systems are set up, if they miss that radius request and they're still monitoring him, you'll see that it's been, you know, cut and pasted. You can't use that at all. So that's the issue here. Carnivore, by the way, have any of you heard of Steve Belevin? Yeah? Steve Belevin wrote an excellent report to Congress, and there's some information still on the internet about, you know, what he actually said about carnivore. But that was one of the biggest issues with carnivore, and what he actually said was, it's like using a dull knife or a fork to perform brain surgery. Something like this. It's a beautiful quote. But messed it up, of course. But the point is just that because you have these devices that are simply not fast enough and the software is not adept enough to handle setting the filter, that you ruin what you came to get. Okay. But I think that's clear. It's really about setting like an ACL or whatever, and also about how quick the software is to do it and taking it off. And then the other challenge is capturing this intercepted information. Very few switches are good at throwing stuff away, because that's exactly what you need. You need like more of a firewall solution than a switch solution. So here you have a switch that's getting all this traffic, because remember, it has to be separate from the production network. So what you're actually doing in an interception solution is you're copying everything, all the traffic, then you're filtering it for the actual user traffic, and then you're forwarding that filtered traffic over to the authorities. That's why it's so dangerous. So when I filter Vijay's traffic instead of just John Doe's, it's too much content that I'm sending over, none of which is admissible. So copy, filter, forward. That's the way that it works, and that very often the copying and filtering mechanism is just not quick enough to capture all of that traffic and to effectively filter just a small portion. And with email intercepts, what you have is a solution that requires you to do defragmentation as well as packet reassembly of the email. And the interception solutions that we've seen so far just aren't quite there yet. And you also have to talk about TCP resequencing and libraries and blah, blah. And because you're talking about so much traffic and just that, it's much more complicated than just having an email program at the other end that's doing it for you. So there's one provider that I've actually seen that does it very well. Their name is Pine, a very small company. But there's very few other solutions that work every time, 100% of the time. For what? Lots of billions of dollars. Okay. Are you going to run out of here and start a company? Okay. Now, and the final issue is the last two issues, is because this is rather complex, because you're not just talking about a sniffer and a box that does packet reassembly, because you're talking about just quite a bit more with a mediation device and something that accepts the warrants and something that also does voice and IP and GSM, it eventually gets a very big thing. So the increase of the software complexity increases the amount of bugginess that you've introduced as well, which was also a complaint of Mr. Belevin before Congress, and it's a continuing complaint to all LI interception people. The final challenge is peering with the law enforcement management community. Before I do this boring thing, I want to show you a movie. First of all, I have to tell you something. How many of you here are with some government entity? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. You may have had this opportunity to see such a presentation before, well, this movie that I'm going to show you. But if you were not a government entity, or you were not somehow affiliated with a secret service, you would not be able to see what I'm about to show you. So just keeping that in mind, that's the intended audience. By the way, I'm not advocating them. I'm an independent consultant. I'm not advocating them. I just think it's nice for you to see. Thank you.
agencies and security organizations find themselves facing an ever-growing variety of challenges and threats to security. Some of them are traditional ones, such as handling drug trafficking, internal security, fighting organized crime, and of course, terrorism. Others are new, such as cybercrime and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Secrecy and covert actions are your target's middle names. They operate both locally and worldwide, trying to inflict as much damage as possible. In order to remain undetected, they use a variety of advanced communication techniques such as the internet, cellular, and satellite phones. NICE has incorporated its expertise with the operational background of intelligence experts and is proud to introduce its NICE Track product line.
I love the 70s music.
No? NICE Track complies with the international standards for lawful interception, such as the European ETSI, the American Kalea, and various proprietary protocols. In addition, NICE Track features a non-intrusive passive mode for interception of network trunks. NICE Track may be configured in various ways, from a small-scale local system up to a full-scale nationwide system with central and remote sites. The technical concept behind NICE Track includes various redundancy options such as RAID 5 mirroring and hot swappable devices for the system's components, providing smooth and uninterrupted operation around the clock. An intuitive, user-friendly command and control interface enables the system administrator to easily monitor the technical status and operational workflow of the system. Special attention has been given to assure that the system's integrity is not compromised. This is achieved by using login IDs, passwords, and by configuring different user profiles, each with a detailed set of permissions according to each user's clearance. Electronic authentication, use of proprietary formats, and advanced auditing tools are also a part of NICE Track's comprehensive security concept.
I love this. I think this is so funny, but it's, remember, you know, fictional, blah, blah, and not a marketing pitch.
In some cases, as in the case you are about to see, the plot begins when a court issues a warrant allowing partial or full monitoring of a suspect's telecommunication devices. This is done after the law enforcement agency is tipped off about possible subversive or criminal activities of a certain suspect.
Yeah. Hello, Mirage. This is Maverick.
Yeah, hey, we need to be through. This is very important.
Well, send me your instructions to my machine. You know where it's...
Yeah, I remember. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, according to my...
Of course. I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, bye.
Voice identification confirmed.
NICE Track allows real-time and offline monitoring. When a suspect uses his phone, he is under constant surveillance. A system operator can monitor his activity and compose synopses or transcriptions of his telephone calls.
There's also supposed to be an automatic transcription available.
A unique system feature, the Executive Connect, allows field agents and case officers to be notified about relevant information in real time, anytime, anywhere. The Executive Connect is a powerful operational tool for conducting special activities such as covert surveillance.
So he's sitting there and he's getting the exact same information that the target is.
NICE Track allows monitoring of a wide range of communications protocols, including Group 3 and various non-standard fax protocols. As the use of cellular technology is constantly widening, Law enforcement agencies and security organizations genuinely need to effectively monitor this communication medium. NiceTrack fully answers this requirement. In addition, the system offers usage of GIS data in order to conduct real-time or offline surveillance of a target's movements. This way, authorities may have a wider intelligence outlook and gain better insight into a target's behavior pattern. Hostile elements extensively use computer communications for their purposes.
Pay attention here, because he's doing this from an internet cafe.
NiceTrack offers a unique and comprehensive solution for monitoring various sorts of computer communications, such as emails, voice over IP, chat, and instant messaging. NiceTrack offers short-term and long-term unlimited archiving of collected data and has a special application for presenting evidence in a court of law. This application ensures that the evidence presented is authentic and was not tampered with.
Okay, so, any questions about that? None? You're kidding. Okay, well then you tell me, how do you accomplish email interception from an internet cafe? Right, but how do you know he's going to be at the internet cafe? It's marketing. Oh. No, the issue is, yeah, go ahead. Okay, but that's the whole point, because full content implies the full TCP stream. But if you're just going to be at yahoo.com and it's John Doe at Yahoo, you don't get the full TCP stream. You just get his email communication. You don't get what websites he surfed to. You don't get his AIM stuff, because that's all local. That's on that particular PC. In order to do a full TCP tap from an internet cafe, you need to be at that internet cafe, because what you're doing is you're monitoring as close as possible to that, yes. But how do you know which service provider is providing that internet cafe with a connection? Everyone? No. You see, that's something that does not happen, because then there would be a riot. You can't say, listen, if John Doe shows up at your house, let me know. So it doesn't work that way, because then you'd have a warrant issued everywhere, and that just is not effective, and it's simply not the way that... Because you're trying to associate a particular name from an ISP with a username. And that's the whole basis of the warrant. And these are things that are understood and arranged at the legal level with every single operator when you initially, like, specify how you're going to accomplish an intercept. Yes. Pre-investigation. Yeah, if it was around the block and he always goes there, yes. You got to remember that those were all like stipulations. And what I wanted to show is that this is a marketing that's done towards government agencies. So it's a cool video to see, especially when you see how they're, you know, pushed with the software. And this is the actual device that they will get at the end of the day when they purchase it for X amount of, you know, $100,000 or $1 million. So there is definitely a market. Hmm. Yes, yes. There has to be a warrant first. Yes. Oh, it is useful. That's exactly what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that you do need to capture at the ISP, but in the case that we're implying where you have a, because you do not know in advance for a full TCP tap, you do not know in advance that he's going to be connecting for his internet access, like at this particular internet service provider. You just know that he's going to internet cafe. So in this particular example, it would be more useful to sit at the cafe than at the ISP. Yes, exactly. Otherwise, you just get his mailbox. Yeah. And you do that. I mean, even when you do have a full TCP tap from an ISP, it could still be that he has an AOL mail account, and that's what he uses primarily for his mail. And that all you have is, especially when it's webmail, you don't have anything except for that TCP stream, and what you would prefer, of course, is direct access to the mailbox. But that's also depending on how you do the interception and how you accept the interception. Okay. Just gonna get back to where we were. This is very slow today. I have no idea why. Okay, so this is a bit boring, but you know, hopefully the video would have woken you up a bit. I should have done that. Yes. Master view and da-da-da. Yeah. Okay. What is the legal basis? Well, basis basically was that the EU established a directive, and they said we need to tap communications from service providers. Subsequent to that, there was a convention on cybercrime, which covered a whole bunch of issues, but specifically Article 20 and Article 21 covered real-time tapping and actual gathering of content information, content data. And supplemental to that are the national laws and regulations, which do at this moment differ between the European countries, but later will be harmonized to form one big policy. So technically speaking, and this is what I wanted to say about how it's divergent from the United States perspective, it's nothing like Carnivore or CLIA, which is the legal basis for tapping in the States. The Patriot Act, all it says is, in a CLIA-like environment, what subsequent conditions can be fulfilled in order to speed up a tap. You know, that's basically all the Patriot Act does. It adds lubricants to the process. Okay. In Europe, it is definitely a standards, best practices-based approach. And one of the things that I suggest you read if you've got the time and, you know, have a few hours before you fall asleep is 2804, which is the IETF policy on wiretapping. This is fully advocated by the EU. They do not want to build tapping into the functionality of protocols, which is what 2804 says. They say, in IPv6, I don't want a leaf header, or I don't want a leaf to be a portion of the header, rather. I want to fully be able to have secure, strong protocols, and when necessary, have additional mechanisms to tap, but not have them baked in to the actual mechanisms that I'm using to conduct my communications. Yes, they are signatory to the Convention on Cybercrime, but they are not part of the rest of the EU directives. And actually, that's funny you should ask, because I gave a talk for the Internet Society in Geneva, and one of the things that I got as a bonus for doing that talk was their actual technical implementation of interception. And all they're doing, the only thing they're interested in, is email interception. And the way that they do it is not even a full TCP tap. The way that they do it is just basically a blind copy forward from the mailbox. So it's a very, very active interception, and it is not a fully transparent solution. It is not completely, you know, how do you say, non-interacting with the production environment. It's full on. So, and the other way that they had originally done it, which was just, you know, clap, clap with the clamps on the telephony infrastructure, that's still very acceptable, which is no longer acceptable in Holland. So it's very different. Okay, the solution requirements per country, roughly across Europe. Basically, one of the things is the intensity of the solution. So does a solution always have to be available, and can it be any kind of solution as long as it require or performs to the required objective? That differs per country, but the only interesting countries that are really here is Germany, which says, no, you don't have to have a permanent solution, but yes, there is an obligation for a flexible solution. And also, if you look at the UK, the solution is not so flexible, so the government does need to approve the solution that's going to be set up by the ISP in order to accomplish interception, and it does need to be permanent. The same for the Netherlands. It can be flexible, does need to be permanent. And the permanent objective is something that means that it'll relatively be quite expensive. It always needs to have an always-on capacity to be able to perform an intercept at any time, so really quick turnover time between asking for the intercept and delivering the intercept. In Dutch law, they have a word in the actual statute that says the intercept needs to be performed in a time that's onverwijld. And onverwijld means it can't take too long. It has to be reasonable. And reasonable shifts between people, between judges and telcos. Okay. In France, in Germany, in every European country, from the Patriot Act, there's been subsequent legislation after 9/11. France has this board, Commission Nationale de Contrôle des Commission Nationale de Contrôle des Interceptions de Sécurité, and basically it's called CNCIS, and what they do is they review every interception request that's coming in. This is because France has had a bit of a problem when it comes to intercepting, like, the communications of opposing political parties, the press, and these are not good for public relations. So, yes, also? Yes. Yes. But not... Yeah, but that's getting better. That's quite okay now, actually. But they're reviewing the escrow debate, and they're reviewing, you know, that not that crypto isn't going to be dispersed because they can no longer control it, but that since crypto is so dispersed, shouldn't we have a mechanism of at least escrowing it? So the only allowed cryptography will be cryptography that does have escrow mechanisms in place, stuff like that. And then there's a general law, which is November 2001, which allows easier facilitation of setting up an intercept, setting up cooperation between different police and military and secret service organizations to... So basically, what are we saying? We're saying, you know, you have really strict requirements about what you need in order to make a warrant. And now those requirements are almost gone. If you say the word terrorism, then you don't need those strict requirements. There's not that much review. So you go up to CNCIS and you say one really explicit word, and then the rest of the process it goes like butter. In Germany, you have a rather famous law, the G10 law. I'm not going to try to pronounce this. Is there anyone German? They can do this. Are you? Lovely. This is also the name. This is also the name of the interception solution in Germany that's very popular, that's used rather widely, Gaetin, which when I said it the last time at CCC, they laughed at me because I said Gaetin. But okay, that was a joke. Okay, fine. But in any case, the architecture for a G10 is actually available on the internet. So if you want to look at a sample architecture, go ahead. One of the interesting things about G10 is that it requires, basically, their implementation is port spanning. Yeah, which is rather funny, because you're not getting the full TCP stream then, you know? You miss quite a bit. But it's, you basically, on a Cisco, if you have a switch, you take the collected communication on the switch, and if you want to have, like, say, a sniffer into port 13, then you would say port span, blah, 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 your traffic to port 13, and this is the solution for G10. That's how they do it. Okay. The Counterterrorism Act in Germany does the same facilitation. Yes. Unfortunately, no. Cryptography especially. Like, are you familiar with Simple Nomad? He's giving a talk, well, he's not giving a talk, but he's on the Hacker Panel. He gave a talk last year at Black Hat where he said that he had spoken to some people in the government, and they were able to crack PGP 1024 already, but within the NSA. So as a result, he said, use 2048 or more if you're going to have encrypted communication. But this particular interception solution, or all the other interception solutions that I'm talking about, none of them have any method of dealing with STEG or with encryption. Yes. But there's a lot of dumb terrorists, thankfully. Because if you, I don't know, how many of you saw Bush's little, I want to say something, but I'll get in trouble for it. Speech before Congress, where the 70-point speech. Yes? Okay. Well, I think it was, let me see, I have it written, I think it was point 33 and 37. He was talking about a GSM intercept, a call to Osama bin Laden that they had somehow managed to recover, but he wouldn't explain how he got it. And then point 60 or something was an email exchange. I actually borrowed this from Fred Baker, who had quoted it a while ago. And this this email exchange was, I mean, you would think that someone who was in Al-Qaeda would be like, PGP, you know, but no. If they were able to get that, I don't think that they put the entire resources of the country to intercepting that email exchange and deciphering it. No, GSM can be completely kept. What you have for GSM, you have a combination of technologies for GSM. This is not supposed to be what I'm talking about, but let me just quickly tell you about GSM. You have two possibilities to capture GSM traffic. You either copy it off of the backbone of the GSM provider themselves, or you have, if you're mobile, which you have an IMSI catcher. So when you have IMSI-EMI correlation, which is the actual number that you have hard-coded into your telephone and your logical user subscription ID, what you do is you go around with a little box, like a laptop, and you have an IMSI catcher software on it. And basically then your laptop with a little antenna says, guess what? I'm a base station. You can talk to me now. And unless you have, this will defeat, by the way, the GSM encryption protocol, since it was already weakened by vendors anyway. So you don't have that communication. And here's the best part. Anyone can buy an IMSI EMI catcher. They're available for like private detective agencies, or there's very little due diligence on those kinds of products. And in fact, I will tell you another story about due diligence on interception products in a minute. One quick thing, you can read this slide, it's in your books later, but basically the UK has two big points of legislation. The UK is big enough that I need to mention them now, which is the RIPA, which talks about the same thing. We want to intercept, you guys have to help us intercept being a telco or a service provider. And then you have the same kind of law that was initiated after September 11th, Anti-Terrorism, Crime and Security Act. And I have a quote for you from, you know, MI5, James Bond's little hangout. His boss, the Home Secretary of the UK, has a little quote where he says, yeah, it's too bad about that September 11th thing, but you know, it was really good for the whole world to kind of wake up and smell the coffee about why it's important for the intelligence community to have resources and power and men. So it's a good thing in the end of the day. That's what he says in his quote. Am I talking too fast? No. Okay, the case in Holland. They are at the forefront, both legally and technically, in terms of interception. The Dutch Telecommunications Act of 1998 says what the operator is responsible to do, and if you are not doing it, you are not allowed to be an operator in the Netherlands. The Dutch Code of Criminal Proceedings, the Wet van Strafvordering, explains how you can start and handle a particular request. So you have a warrant. Where does it go? If you have it and you have 20 ISPs in your country, which ISP has to handle it? And are you going to now disperse this warrant unequivocally across all the ISPs and say, who has this user? That's rather indiscreet. So there are methods and procedures for handling all different kinds of warrants. The Special Investigatory Powers Act does the same thing as the other methods we talked about earlier, which is just streamlining your criminal investigation and expediting matters when needed. There's a new proposed law. It's through the second house of the Dutch government, but it's not through the first house yet. And when it's through the first house, it will be a full law and not just a proposal. But basically, it's a, and I love this word, backdoor decree to start fishing expeditions. So it's like, I don't have a legal basis really for a warrant, but you know, Vijay's shirt is kind of suspicious looking, and he hasn't shaved in at least 3 days, and he just looks generally scruffy, so let's intercept him. Sorry, Vijay, I apologize for all aspersions of your physical appearance. But these are the kinds of bases that we begin to start warrants, and that's not a legal basis. And it's normally nothing that would be condoned by the Dutch government, but, you know, it's been shoved through a specific political channel, and it's going to be law soon. Anyway, the provider and ultimately is going to give information that he normally never would need to make available to the authorities. And not just to the authorities, but it's to any, like, sub-branch of the authorities. So not just the top investigator of the cybercrime unit can ask for this warrant, but the junior police officer who thinks that maybe you look funny on the street can initiate this. No. And in fact, originally they were going to try to do it via another thing, which was going to be about, who hated? It was a financial fraud thing, but he was going to tie it to the officer of justice that was responsible for this was going to tie it to something else. So they were trying two different methods to get this kind of power. And when the one failed, because people started noticing, the other one succeeded, because when it's through the second house, it pretty much flows through the first. There's just been a bit of delay because of a certain like procedural slowness in the government. It'll definitely go through it. So, yeah. And no one in the country right now is screaming about it. It's been in very quietly hushed in the media and everything. Okay, what we also have in Holland, which is like the CNCIS, but a bit different because it's much more closely cooperating with the telcos, is the LIO, the Landelijke Interceptieorganisatie, or the National Interception Office. And it's fully there, it's in place, it's coordinating intercept requests from the government side, because you've got two different sides that you need to coordinate. You've got the telco or operator side, and then you've got the government side. So when you have the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the and the... Any other secret organizations you want to tell me about? No? I'm looking at you, because... No, too secret. Okay. Yeah. But when you have... Sorry? You work for the post office, really? Terrible. But they're the worst, aren't they? You're reading our email, or mail. But anyway, the point is that when you need to coordinate all those agencies' requests, especially when there are multiple requests for the same user or the same authority, it also becomes quite complicated. So we have two different organizations that are partnering with each other to make that smoother. Okay, Etsy, who are they? Why do we like them? So slow. Okay. There's a technical specification that's been put out by Etsy to explain the lawful interception model. This is going to be a bit weird with diagrams that are in the next couple of slides, but basically you have two distinct domains. You have the law enforcement domain and you've got the service provider domain. Within the service provider domain, they're supposed to do certain stuff. They have stuff that's related to the actual interception functionality. So there's inside the network, there's intercept-related information, like the logs, the time, the radius request, etc. And then you have the content of communication. This actually deals with the intercept itself. Then you've got like this little virtual barrier with the actual network interface, and you have three different functions that are being carried out by devices. An administrative function, like I have warrant number one. Warrant number one for target James Doe and Vijay, warrant number two for Vijay, warrant number one for John Doe. And then you have a mediation function, which means that it's coordinating how the information gets carried over to the law enforcement agency. So we're talking about a router, a separate physical channel, et cetera, those kinds of things. And then you have a concept of communication, you have an IRI mediation function for that initial IRI traffic, and that could be stored for 6 months or longer, etc. And then you have the actual contents of communication mediation function, which might have different parameters in terms of real time or offline or whatever. all this information gets handed over to the law enforcement agencies over very important handover interfaces. So you have handover interface 1, which is the administrative stuff, handover interface 2, which is the mediation stuff, and handover interface 3, which is the actual content of communication. The reason that the handover stuff is so important is because this is the work of Etsy. What they want to do is make uniform everywhere, all over Europe, the same language between a law enforcement agency and the operator. So when they say, hey, your HI3 mechanism sucks, everybody knows what they're talking about. Yeah? Okay, so lots of blah blah. Basically, they're working on interoperability. They're doing stuff that's good for LI in terms of at least making it uniform. There are different documents. You can check this out, and if you have the time, you know, go for it. Read the documents. I have some documents for you, and I've just basically said what they do. There's a separate LI committee. They're still working. They were supposed to already be done in April of this year with an initial document. They're not done, but they're still having nice trips to Nice and Mallorca, and let's see, they're going in a bit to Finland. So they're working on it, but yeah, they're taking their time because their trips are too nice. Well, I'm going to go get smacked. Maybe we can edit that off the tape later. And the current status is basically that they're still in progress. They're still working on it. It's primarily operators and vendors. The best document that they have, no, really 10 minutes? Okay. Is Etsy 944, which is the issues document. They talk about all the issues with IP interception. Okay, this is a quick blurb about what they've got in 944. Basically, they talk about the architecture, which we already covered, security aspects, HI3 delivery, so how you actually accomplish handover. Let's do the Dutch TIIT specs, which will take forever because the slide will never come. Okay. It was started with a working group. The players were all the little ISPs in the country. The end result was a TIIT version 1. You can find the document. It's on opentap.org. And the deadlines were full IP and email taps by 2002. They formed a body with the Dutch ISPs to make interception cheaper. And it was the NLIP. But it was a massive failure because all the ISPs disagreed about Cisco versus Juniper, Linux versus Microsoft. The same shit, but different, you know, chance. I know, I keep cursing. It's terrible. And the costs were one thing that they tried to mitigate without success, and that was one of the reasons for the failure of the NLIP. It's basically a huge challenge for smaller IPs to compete in LI and have solutions that are as equally functional as larger IPs because they can't afford it. The argumentation should go, of course, that the larger IPs will have more warrants at the end of the day. So they need it, and the smaller IPs won't, but we'll see. A TIIT, I'm just going to go right out to the actual diagram. There's a general architecture that defines how communication happens through the TIIT, and I just want to get through that so that you have a brief idea of how it works. Basically, there are these boxes which provide the interception functionality. Then they actually collect all the traffic. So they intercept the target traffic, they timestamp it, they generate a SHA-hash over the first 64 packets. They queue that traffic over with a key specific for this information. They encrypt those 64 target packets. They send it off to the S2. The S2 is just a router, but it's gathering and it's transporting the stuff over to the other side. This is the blah blah handover mechanism. It's a logical interface over the internet. So what does the S2 do? It collects the target packets from the S1. It distributes it randomly over 6 IP addresses using IPsec or TLS. And it's using X509 certificates. And we've established a certificate authority. There's mutual authentication happening. So this should say something about the requirements for security on that link. And the S3 is the mediation device, or the management box, that's actually starting the interception, collecting the billing traffic, et cetera. Because ISPs have a bit of a conflict of interest. Because every intercept they do, they get paid by the government. Just a bit of a conflict of interest that they kind of want to tap their users. Anyway, and the T1s, what they do is they're on the government side, and they collect the traffic, and they forward it to the relevant T2s, which are like the FBI is one T2, the CIA is another T2, and the T1s are just responsible for collecting and sending it back to the right people. And the T2 is where the actual decryption happens. Okay, taking forever. All right, this is the most interesting part, which we're going to have very little time for. Basically, also, you can always email me. I have cards as well. Big story, Verint, formerly known as Converse Infosys. What's the story with Verint? Well, they were in the news a lot because of FRAC, under others. What they had done was they supposedly had been tapping the FBI, and they supposedly had a back door to Israel. So Verint is a company that is based out of Israel. Whether or not it was true that there are back doors built into the interception software is unknown, but it is questionable about how they accomplished a great bunch of things. There are official responses from Verint saying, we would never do that, you know, why bother? Yes, we do use Yiddish language keyboards, but we don't do anything above board, and they don't provide the code for review to any government as of yet. However, they are in negotiations with the Dutch government in order to do that. Here's the stickler. Verint is the most widely used interception software in the world. They are being used by the Dutch government in order to conduct their portion of interception, and they're also very widely used in the United States. So if there's any truth to those stories, it has quite a potential impact. And, you know, the Mossad, if they do handle it, this kind of information, the question is also, what do they really have in terms of value in intercepts that are being done in the U.S. or Holland? Okay, so three kinds of implementation techniques. Active, direct local implementation, like blind copy forward. Semi-active, which is interaction with a radio server, which is the majority of intercepts and interception solutions. Capture the traffic, filter it per IP address, send it forward. And passive means that there's no interaction whatsoever. We're talking about carnivore. Got 5 minutes left. No interaction with the ISP whatsoever. Carnivore, turn on, turn off. You have no idea as an ISP when it's happening, what's going on. Sure, there's a warrant somewhere, but you don't know about it. They don't need you to intercept. And a vampire tap is the same principle. You have access to the closets, and you go and you click. Most of the following vendors are either semi-active or active. And there are a few that are quite passive, but those are the satellite implementations. Verint, okay, read FAQ 5813. That has the full story. Look at the Fox News article. That's also out there. The thing is that they support both standards, and I told you a bit about their response already. NICE is the video we just saw. They're used in Belgium by the law enforcement as their primarily T1. It is proprietary, but it has been implemented for Etsy. They're supposed to be able to do all this cool stuff, topic extraction off of email. So they have like a compendium of information, and they're doing topic extraction. Can't say that word now. They can also supposedly do keyword spotting. What you saw with the agent receiving that communication, either over a GSM phone or over a remote laptop. So that they send that. However, there are some issues with that. And apparently they can also do automatic language detection and translation, which is very cool, but I can't validify the effectiveness of such a thing. It does run on Windows NT, so there's a comfort to all of you. It is a standalone internet telephony solution as well. Okay, ADC is SSH. They do big, big time taps. So large bandwidth connections, satellite connections, that's what they're tapping. So anything that needs to run across a transatlantic, anything, you're looking at using SSH to tap it. One of the things that we do know is that they have a very strict vendor relationship with Top Layer to do layer 7 filter extraction. Acuris, limitation, maximum of 50 concurrent taps. Acuris is based out of Ireland. The solution is not dependent on a particular type of switch. And they do offer a gigabit solution, which it makes them quite attractive, but it depends on the particular switch capability, integration, filter setting. They also support CLIA and Etsy. One more thing that's not on any of the slides or in your books. Cisco and Juniper and every other hardware vendor that's being used on a telco or ISP backbone, they are also getting into the interception game. So what they're doing is, and they're, like I said, Fred Baker, he wrote an IETF draft about it, so please read that. There's an article by Declan McCullough on the internet as well about Fred Baker and his interception policy. That's quite interesting because it would mean that interception could be ubiquitous across every domain, and that you only need to pay a small fee for getting the iOS that supports it. And if you have a mediation device that can collect SNMP v3, then you are intercepting off of that backbone. Okay, so that's pretty important. Finally, it's all about the money. This is your cue to sing or hum. Solutions cost a lot of money. They can cost between 100,000 euros to 700,000 euros or dollars for the ISP. The UK government expected to spend 46 billion over the next 5 years, which then they've later talked about reducing to 27 billion. In February, they talked about an article about having a data retention solution that would cost 36 billion. That's because they wanted to retain data for over 6 years. Actually, the 36 billion was a cost that Yahoo had estimated for implementing a data retention solution in London or in the UK. Well, this is just what they said that it would cost. So then the government said, okay, well, we'll get back to you on that one. We'll reconsider and look at, really, if it does cost that much. Because there's also something else on the internet, which is a white paper that's done. I'm surprised that it's still on the internet. But it's a study that's been done about the feasibility, about providing a government-based solution to all the ISPs. It's very interesting. I'll take my card, I'll give you the link. It's not on my links page. Division of costs. Remember I said conflict of interest? The capital expenditure, which is the initial expenditure to set up the solution, is borne by the ISP. So ISP sometimes has to bear a burden of between 100 to 700,000 euros unless they're willing to build a solution that's fully compliant by themselves. Very few of the smaller or mid-sized ISPs have the resources for this. This is an issue. The operational expenditure, so the expenditure per warrant to maintain the solution, that is borne by the government. And in Holland, each ISP can negotiate a separate deal with the government to say, okay, per intercept, we're going to charge you, the government, I don't know, $1,000, because we need to employ one security officer, and we've got a guy that's monitoring the system, blah, blah, blah. So this is our cost per tap. Each ISP can negotiate a different deal, which is pretty nice. So some ISPs have negotiated a cushier deal than others. If you don't do it, you have to maybe house arrest the CEO of the ISP, or pay up to $200,000 in fines, or have civil charges weighed against you. So it's not really a very big choice issue. One of the ISPs in Holland, Zonnet, was charged for the financial fine. Their CEO was threatened to be under house arrest. So we're not joking anymore. And because the solution was already supposed to be fully in force by 2002, it's time over. Okay. And the cooperations between the ISP that choose a single LI to, it failed in Holland, but maybe it'll be a success in other European countries. This is law enforcement. So the guys in law enforcement here, take a look at this. All I'm trying to say is if you are going to intercept, do it properly. Disclose your tools, disclose methods. If you are using stuff, try to make it open source. Make sure you're adhering to the warrant submission requirements. It's pretty clear. And unfortunately, law enforcement has not been fully trained to have the same level of aptitude speaking to people at ISP. So the information that they actually need to catch the bad guys, they don't get, or they don't know how to read or interpret the information they get from the ISPs, and that's a huge problem. So what's the actual benefit of interception? Future issues. I'm just going to point out a few. Enfopol is going to be the organization that's going to be handling data retention. And that's going to have a huge impact on how ISPs maintain and conduct their business. With EU expansion, all the Eastern European countries also have to have the same interception facilities available as the Western countries. So we're talking about the Czech Republic, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, all have to have full EU compliant LI systems in place. And eventually it's going to be in one Europol web across the EU. One of the talks that was just given during lunch by Dario Forte is doing that across Europe, but then eventually also spreading it towards Interpol, so it's done transatlantically. So you have cooperation for intercepts across the world. We're talking about borderless LI. What about quantum crypto? That's huge. If you can guarantee that the link is secure, what about an internetworked quantum crypto system that prevents you, give me all the encryption you got, it doesn't matter. Because as long as I know the link is insecure, I will not communicate. That's a brilliant idea. Okay, WLAN challenges. Well, if you're providing a WLAN, you know, and you're providing a network, are you also responsible then for providing an interception solution to the government? Because technically, you're a public communications provider, because any member of the public can walk across your WLAN range and have access to the internet. So are you also then responsible for providing a solution to intercept that traffic? It's huge. And then what is the future of privacy legislation? I got some websites for you. And I had, well, I had some questions, but they're also in your book and on your CD. Here we go. I didn't think you were going to have questions for me, and I wasn't sure. Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. It is, and it has. I do. Sorry.